to the second case of the day, Mondry v. American Family Mutual. Mr. Peterson?
Yes. Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Robert Peterson, and my co-counsels are Aaron McBride and Bryn McBride. We're attorneys with ABC for Health, a nonprofit public interest law firm that represents families and children with disabilities who seek access to health care and coverage, and we work with them on challenging denials. This case is on appeal from an order of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Wisconsin, a final judgment entered on December 13, 2006. The nature of this case speaks to the express duties of administrators and fiduciaries under ERISA plans and the equitable and statutory consequences for breaching those duties.
Mr. Peterson, with respect to count one and the request for documents under section 1024B4,
yes.
If Cigna had sole possession of the BIRT, the BERT, and clinical resource tool,
CERT,
and refused to produce those documents, by what authority could American Family force Cigna to produce the documents?
Well, they're the plan administrator, at least in title. Part of our argument is that Cigna clothed themselves in plan administrator's duties, functions, and assumed exclusive authority over much of the claims administration process.
So basically, are you saying that American Family had a contractual right to insist that Cigna produce these documents?
Theoretically, they were the plan administrator and should have exercised authority. It's debatable under the service agreement between American Family and Cigna because they delegated so much authority over the claims administration process.
So it's not a contractual? I'm trying to get to that.
Right. I mean, in the scheme of things, American Family was identified as the plan administrator and should have exercised authority and control over the process.
I'm going to ask again. Is it because of a contractual right?
Yes.
So is that the theory under which you asked American Family for a copy of its contract with Cigna?
Yes, partly. And we also asked Cigna for those documents.
Right.
I mean, this case is about a transparent process intended by Congress. How are you supposed to appeal a denial of benefits if you don't have the specific reason for that denial? And that's articulated pretty clearly in 1133.
They were de facto the plan administrators.
That's part of our argument. And we believe that Cigna acted as de facto plan administrator. And that goes along with the line of cases from this court, including Jones and Root. The actions by Cigna really present themselves as the plan administrator and attach fiduciary duties and responsibilities to them throughout this process, which were blatantly ignored despite our numerous requests for documents to try and gain an understanding of the reasons for the denial of the speech therapy for Zev Mondry, our client's child with autism. Moreover, this case sounds inequity. We believe that the appeal is appropriate. It's inequity since we are seeking restitution. For an inexplicable reason, Cigna still holds $303.89 of our client's money in the form of reimbursement that should have been paid on the claims that were submitted. Under the doctrine of unjust enrichment, Cigna is still holding those dollars and holding dollars that were the interest on the delayed payment of the claims. That's money that was wrongfully withheld from Sharon Mondry and should be returned to our client. This triggers a number of penalties under 1132C, including the per diem penalties for non-responsive to many communications that were submitted
What's that amount to, do you know?
Yeah.
Well, we have given some information on the number of months that spent. Took 19 months to get the cert, 22 months to get the BERT, and 37 months to get partial reimbursement. But arguably, the clock may still be ticking on the fact that they have never responded to our request for the $303.89. So it's not something that I can precisely tell you at the moment. But we had 38 communications by fax, letter, phone call, numerous more by email, 22 individual requests for plan documents governing the denial, 10 letters and 8 calls to Cigna. An American Family in this process was absent. They were more or less sitting on their hands. In our depositions of Stacey McDaniel, and her deposition on page 26, she indicated she didn't even have a file system set up. She got the letters that we sent in and the copies of the letters and put them in her desk. American Family was asleep at the wheel. Cigna, meanwhile, clothing themselves as the plan administrator, breached Ms. Mondry's fiduciary, their responsibilities to Ms. Mondry and their fiduciary duties. She relied on the representations of both American Family and Cigna to her detriment. She eventually left employment at American Family. Think about a single parent with a child with autism thinking that she's got coverage. For the first 5 months, it looked like she did. Suddenly, she's denied coverage. She has a young child recently diagnosed with autism and needs to identify a place to get coverage. American Family wasn't that place anymore. She had to avail herself of public benefits. She took Badger Care. She moved. Later, she went through a bankruptcy process. This really had a devastating effect on her life. Our effort is to make sure that we hold Cigna, American Family, accountable for these, and I think the intent of Congress to have a transparent process grounded in equity that is fair and fair to recipients to understand the specific reason for the denial. We're not asking this court to take a broad leap into asking for every single document that Cigna had in their possession. I mean, if you look at our brief, it specifically asked for those documents that they referenced in their earliest communications. June 13th, they identified the cert. July 23rd, they identified the BERT. These documents were affirmatively identified by Cigna as being used to deny benefits. And we asked for those documents. But then the shield came up, and they wouldn't provide them to us until months and months had passed. If the plan administrators are allowed to do this, think of the consequences for beneficiaries. Give you a reason for denying the claim, never give you the foundation of that reason, the underpinnings within the contract and the reasons that they denied it. We spent months not even being able to prepare for a second level appeal because we didn't have the specific reason for the denial. If we look at the service agreement between American Family and Cigna, we can see exactly how much authority was ceded to Cigna. And that document should have been released under 1024. The district court ruled that it wasn't a related document under 1024B4. That was an error, we believe, because contracts are specifically enumerated in the statute. It's a contract that details the relationship between the parties, and it was really one of our only ways of determining the nature of that relationship and better understanding what the role of Cigna was and the role of American Family. It was not clear in the SPD. And once we made the request for that document, we also should have been provided that within 30 days, and we weren't.
Does the plan indicate in any way that American Family can shift the decision-making process to someone else?
Well, it describes that Cigna has exclusive control over the claims process and the claims administration process, and I think that gives credence to our argument that Cigna has accountability here as de facto administrator. They had tremendous amount of authority in that process pursuant to the contract. It doesn't mean that American Family can just sit on their hands and not respond. They still maintain a fiduciary relationship to Sharon Mondry. They have a responsibility to assist her and not to just sit on their hands and point fingers at Cigna. Well, Cigna won't give us this information. Cigna won't provide the cert and the BERT. Their general counsel contacted Cigna to ask for the BERT. Cigna said, well, it's too big anyway. It was a six-page, double-sided document that we got in discovery. Could have fit in a standard envelope and mailed it to us, but they didn't. They misled us all through the process. Ultimately, they sent us another agreement.
Who said it was too big? I know Cigna, but who for Cigna said it was too big?
It was Mr. Peterson, no relation. Carl Peterson, an employee of Cigna, that said it was too big to send anyway. And all that they were required to provide was the plan document. Well, the summary plan document did not have the detail that we needed. It simply was inadequate. And if you're going to get to file an appeal, you need to know the basis for the denial. And we were stopped at every turn.
Mr. Peterson, if we were not completely sympathetic to this de facto approach, American Family would still be available to you if you were to prevail on your claims, right?
That's correct. American Family bears responsibility as well in this, but we do believe that Cigna, in this process, could be found as a de facto administrator, but we have
to reach that, is I guess my...
That's correct, but you can also find that Cigna is a fiduciary without finding that they were a de facto administrator. And I think that's when you look at the Rood case from this court, it opens that door. This is that case that was alluded to in Rood.
But there's language that allows you to make the argument clearly, and I appreciate that. But Rood didn't turn on that, though.
No, it didn't. No, but it certainly, I think, opened the door. And we believe that this is the case and the facts. And if you look at the behavior of Cigna, the power and authority of Cigna in this case, the representations that Sharon Mondry relied on and relied on to her detriment, including changing jobs, not accepting COBRA continuation, and all the stress and anxiety that she went through trying to find coverage for her son, Cigna is culpable. There's also the Department of Labor advisory opinion, 9614A, from July 31st, 1996, that I think is instructive to this case. It provides specific instances of any document or instrument that specifies procedures, formulas, methodologies, or schedules be applied to determining or calculating a participant's beneficiary benefit entitlement would constitute an instrument under which a plan is established or operated, regardless of whether such plan information is contained in the document designated as the plan document. We're even looking at something that is more narrow than that Department of Labor advisory opinion. We're looking for this court to find that if you use it, you lose it. If you reference the specific documents, the cert and the BERT, in this case, in your communications as the reason for denying a benefit, then you are responsible for providing that documentation to the beneficiary so that they can prepare an appropriate appeal. In this situation, they used it and then hid it for as long as they could. They didn't give us access to it, and we went through enormous lengths to try and get it. And that, I think, is the crux of the lack of a transparent process and the lack of consequences. I mean, Cigna and American Family, their position is that they should walk away from this without any consequences for what happened in this process, which was hardly transparent and very devastating for Sharon Mondry and her son. The fiduciary duty concept, as we outlined in our brief, is grounded in 1104A and the Supreme Court decision in Pegram. We point out that fiduciaries must carry out their duties with the care, skill, prudence, and diligence under the prevailing circumstances, like a prudent person with knowledge and like capacity would use to conduct an enterprise of like character. In this situation, you know, as we argue, both American Family and Cigna failed in that responsibility. Nothing in this process demonstrates that they handled their fiduciary responsibilities in the manner of a prudent person. Anything but. We saw misrepresentations of the terms of the administration of the plan, failing to disclose material facts affecting her interests, willingly declined to provide and complete accurate plan information, promulgating misleading information in response to our request. Remember that in the record, we've got the counsel for Cigna, Mr. Pendergast, saying to us, the cert and the BERT apply to this, the cert and the BERT don't apply to this. I mean, spinning it left, spinning it right, all is a part of the process of obfuscation that they engaged in. Ultimately, we didn't gain clarity on this process until the pretrial order right before Judge Shabazz in the District Court for the Western District, when we found the reason that our appeal was granted. And they said the cert and the BERT were not supposed to be applied to this case. The cert was a managed care document. The BERT had the wrong language in it. So, you know, you can see that in this whole process, what they used were documents that weren't even relevant. What they put forward to us weren't relevant to her appeal. If they had told us this earlier, we wouldn't be here. We would have gotten the information. We could have challenged it much earlier. And I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Swofford?
Morning, Your Honors. I represent Connecticut General Life, which everybody wants to refer to as Cigna this morning, and in the briefs as well. The district court dismissed the case against my client in a very early stage, and it dismissed the penalty, the count one, the penalty action, because the duty to produce plan documents, which we do not believe the certain BERT were, which I'll get to in a minute, although Mr. Bolton's going to talk about at more length. On the clear face of the statute, the duty to produce plan documents is on the plan administrator. The penalty is only imposed against the plan administrator.
Why shouldn't we treat Cigna as a plan administrator?
I'm sorry?
Why shouldn't we treat Cigna as a plan administrator for purposes of producing the documents?
Because
Cigna had, forgive me.
I'm sorry, no, I didn't.
Cigna had exclusive control over the claims administration process, and Cigna had exclusive possession of the two key documents that Ms. Mondry wanted, the BERT and the CERT, or CERT.
CERT, whatever.
So why isn't Cigna, rather than American Family, the party with the statutory obligation to produce?
Because the statute defines the administrator as the party, as the person who's identified in the plan as the administrator. And, you know, it is, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, I can't brush over the fact that Cigna didn't produce these documents for a period of time, which in context was about 7.5 months and not the entire course of this litigation or the proceeding. And matter of fact, Mrs. Mondry had already quit her job before her counsel even requested these documents. But the statute imposes the obligation on the designated administrator, of the plan. That's what the statute says. Now, you know, if we that doesn't mean it wouldn't have been without consequence, contractual consequence to Cigna, in turn to American Family.
Well,
if they suffer the consequences, if they were to suffer the consequences of not producing these documents.
If American Family, rather than Cigna, was the sole plan sponsor with the statutory obligation to produce the plan documents, then did American Family have a contractual right to demand that Cigna produce the BERT and the CERT to the extent these qualified as documents to which she was entitled?
Yes, I think they had that contractual right to demand that, yes. The American Family had that contractual right, if not expressly by terms of the contract, by virtue of the contractual relationship, yes.
But in your brief, if I'm correct, you say BERT the BERT and the CERT were not contractually binding documents, so there was no duty
to
produce them.
I don't believe there was any duty under 1024 to produce them because I don't think they're plan documents that govern the plan, okay? And actually, Ms. Mondry's counsel agreed that these were not plan documents and said, no, the plan is the SPD and the standard is medically necessary and not these diagnostic documents. That unquestionably under other provisions, the Department of Labor regulations, which are cited in Mr. Bolden's brief, we should have produced at a more timely fashion. But just because we should have produced them in discovery while she was doing her appeal at the administrative level does not convert them into plan documents because they did not govern the plan. They were the same as any diagnostic document or guideline that the doctors may use in determining, which doctors did use in this case, in determining whether this was a covered treatment for Zeb.
Well, then help me with this. If Cigna was expressly relying on provisions in these documents that were not found in the plan, and as it turns out, were inconsistent with the way in which the plan defined medically necessary, as Judge Shabazz found, then why wasn't she entitled to these documents immediately?
She was entitled to these documents. I'm not going to gloss over the fact that when she requested the documents in October 30th of 2003, when she said she was going to appeal, going to the second level appeal, we should have produced them then instead of in June of the following year. I can't gloss over that fact.
So
there was a delay here. But that doesn't mean there were planned documents. Sorry.
So no damage to her in the end? What's the bottom line of admission?
The statute does not provide for any damage. No, the statute provides for benefit disputes, just like went on in this case. It provides for appeals, just like went on in this case. I mean, we really view this case, and we think the court should really view the case as a garden variety benefit dispute.
You're hiding the ball, though.
Pardon?
You're hiding the ball. Do you mean an ordinary dispute? You didn't give the plan administrator anything.
We didn't give them a BERT and CERT, and we didn't give it to them for, it was a delay of 7.5 months.
If this would have been a big money case, which is not really, but if this had been a serious thing, I can't conceive why you didn't provide that information.
It was a mistake. I have not glossed that over from the moment I've been up here. Okay, Your Honor.
I know it wasn't your decision not to do it, but it's your client's decision.
I understand that, and I do not believe that the statute provides a monetary remedy for this. It provides litigation.
Well, it may
correct
provide
this.
A contractual.
They could have.
American family may be able to go after you for it.
Pardon?
If we, as
I agree. I agree with that 100%, Your Honor. They could have. I agree with that 100%.
But they could have, or they can.
They can.
They can.
Yes, they can. Okay. You know, we divided our time, and I'm sorry I didn't learn the rules. Am I eating into my co-counsel's time or not? Do you know?
Yeah.
I am? Okay. I have to reserve some time for him, so.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Swofford. Mr. Bolden?
My name is Rich Bolton. I represent American Family. American Family is the plan administrator, but American Family is not the claims administrator. And I think that's an important distinction because what's happening here is that Ms. Mondry, in this appeal, is trying to collapse the obligations of the plan administrator into the obligations of the claims administrator.
Did American Family have a contractual right to demand that Cigna produce the BERT and CERT?
You know, in all honesty, everybody's been talking about that in this argument, but there's nothing in the record that says that answers that. I think Mr. Swather said that the contract doesn't explicitly say that, but by virtue of the contractual relationship, that we should have been provided it. I don't know whether we had an absolute or a contractual right to insist upon it. But what I do know is that American Family, which they're permitted to do under ERISA, contracted with a third-party claims administrator and allocated the exclusive responsibility for handling and processing those claims to Cigna.
So in other words, when your client has turned over claims administration to a third party like Cigna, you're saying we should treat Cigna as the plan sponsor with the obligation to produce the documents under 1024?
No, I'm not.
Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm not saying that. What would be more clearly the obligations of the plan administrator arise under 1024B4, which is the obligation to produce the sort of the organic, the constitution of the plan. 1033.
What is a constitution of a plan? There's a plan.
The constitution. And again, I'm using that term. It's the summary plan description.
Oh.
It is the language, and it, which included the language of medically necessary, that Judge Shabazz determined was the controlling plan definition.
So, Mr. Bolton, so did I understand you. If the summary plan is submitted and you contract to a third party for the claims administration, there's total insulation for the administrator? And a situation where there's a failure to turn over timely documents?
It depends on what the documents are.
Well,
if it's a plan document under 1024.
Well, of course it's not a plan document.
No.
Nobody says it's a plan document, but they're using this secret information to deny the claim.
I understand. But Section 1033 entitles a plan participant a full and fair appeal. And the obligation to produce the internal what the claims administrator uses in exercising its discretion, and you can't expect that the plan document itself is going to explain everything so that there's no discretion left to the plan or to the claims administrator. But the claims administrator under 1033 does have an obligation to provide documents relevant to the appeal. So the question isn't whether or not the administrator is insulated. The question is, under 1024B4, are the documents that are being requested plan documents or documents that are relevant to the appeal? And they are not, those two categories of documents are not the same. But I think Ms. Mondry in this appeal is trying to conflate the two. And in fact, very specifically, she says, I'm not asking for a definition of plan documents that would include all internal guidelines, only those documents that are relied upon in making a specific benefit determination.
Yeah, but you see, it seems that in hindsight, we now know that these documents were inconsistent with the actual plan language, and that but it's precisely because these documents were inconsistent with the plan and that Cigna expressly relied on them that Mondry was entitled to their production. And what American Family seems to have done is just said, thrown their arms up and said, well, we can't help you.
Well, one could say that in any case in which a benefit is denied and the claims administrator is found to have improperly denied the claim, one could always then argue that the plan administrator should have done more. But the responsibilities...
How about done something?
Pardon me?
How about done something?
Something? They did do something. And Judge Shabazz, in his decision, I think went to great lengths to indicate that American Family was not blameworthy, that American Family had sought to obtain the documents from Cigna, and that we had no intent.
Is Cigna still your claims administrator?
Pardon me?
Is Cigna still your claims administrator?
Again, it's not part of the record, but the answer is no, for what it's worth. But while we're talking about things that are not part of the record, Mr. Peterson argues that all sorts of dire consequences, that his client changed jobs in Reliance and that she went through a bankruptcy, none of this is part of the record. In fact, Judge Shabazz, again, noted in his decision that Ms. Mondry did not submit any affidavit suggesting that there had been any detrimental reliance. And, in fact, what Mr. Peterson is referring to are depositions that were never submitted in support of summary judgment and other information that was never submitted to the trial court, even in preparation for trial. So the notion that we should have done more is belied, I think, by Judge Shabazz's findings of fact. The other thing that I'll note, and Judge, you pointed out that as it turned out, the clinical resource tool was inconsistent with the plan document. To say that the plan administrator has an obligation to produce as part of its obligation to produce the organic plan document, documents that are inconsistent with it, that they have not even generated or applied, puts a burden on American Family.
But nobody knew that until later. Nobody knew that they would turn out to be inconsistent.
But it is always the case.
What a catch
22.
How many?
Two.
Catch 22.
But it's not really a catch 22 because those documents should have been produced under 1033. Which to say that they should have been produced under one provision doesn't mean that they should be produced under another provision which has a different definition. The other thing that I'll point out is that...
He did ask for the decision-making matters with regard to how the decision was made, didn't he?
Yes, he did. But to say that everything then that the claims administrator utilizes in trying to construe and apply and make benefit determinations is a plan document essentially then says that American Family has to participate in the claims handling process, and in which case you might as well be the claims handler yourself. But the other thing I want to conclude with is this. They say that we were grossly misled because the claims denial simply said not covered because it was not restorative. And as it turned out, what the clinical resource tool said was that not covered unless restorative. So under the labor standard that they cite, you have the obligation to either produce the internal rule or protocol or state the basis. And they stated the basis. And that basis then, as it turned out, was inconsistent with the plan definition of medically necessary, and that's exactly what they argued in their successful internal or administrative appeal. So there wasn't any misleading. They were not misled here. They were told not covered because not restorative. And as it turned out, the documents that they requested said exactly that.
They weren't misled because they just were in limbo somewhere for all those months.
Pardon me? I'm sorry.
If they weren't misled, it's because they weren't anything. They were just sort of in limbo, out there.
But that happens in every instance in which a benefit is denied. The claims administrator says not covered. And if the argument then is made that if you deny it and it is subsequently found that the denial is incorrect, that constitutes a misrepresentation, then the entire claims handling, any denial becomes a breach of fiduciary duty according to the...
Not really, because under Section 1024 before American Family statutorily obliged to provide her with the plan description and any other instruments under which the plan is established or operated, and she just didn't get it.
Under this court's Ames decision, she did get those documents that are defined as plan documents, the documents that govern the plan. The fact that she didn't... Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Bolton, I hear you on that, but let's take this hypothetical. If it doesn't accurately reflect this case, then it doesn't. But you have your claims administrator charged with administering the processing the claims. And suppose you have a situation where there's just a shutdown. It's not inadequate. And the claims administrator, in this case American Family, is informed that there's not a transfer.
That there's not a what?
Not a transfer of the documents, the appropriate documents to be transferred. Because, for example, you did say that American Family did something here when it was informed, which I assume you would take the position they don't have to do anything, right?
I would take the position that.
I guess you'd have to. But is then, if you are so informed that there's a breakdown, not just a delay, which is what's charged here, but there's just they just shut down. They don't get it done. And you're informed that that stoppage has occurred. What's the plan administrator's responsibility when so informed?
I think the plan administrator has a responsibility, a fiduciary responsibility, the plan administrator duties, for instance, to provide plan documents. I think
no question. I'm not,
I think the plan administrator has a fiduciary obligation to act reasonably in selecting claims administrator. Now, in this case, there's no claim that American Family negligently selected a claims administrator.
Yeah. So let's put aside that you weren't negligent, or in my hypothetical, no negligence occurs. But then you're informed of what might appear to be negligent conduct.
By the claims administrator. I think that the claims administration process has its own statutory framework for how you deal with that. And it also has an administrative framework, which says that those documents that are, that including internal documents that are relied upon for a negative or an adverse decision, have to be produced. But this is an important point. A fiduciary, an American Family, is a fiduciary, but a fiduciary is not a fiduciary for all purposes. American Family, basically what we've got here is a claims handling dispute. You say maybe we should have done more, and maybe we should have. But we were not operating, in the cases reflect that fiduciary duty is a functional term. Were you operating as a fiduciary as to what you're claimed to have screwed up in doing? We're not a fiduciary in this case in regard to claims handling. So really, as to American Family, if they're not planned documents, then American Family wasn't a fiduciary. Doesn't mean that they don't have other mechanisms under 1033, including, they participated. I think they could have probably brought suit for denial of benefits sooner than they did, but they participated in the process. But under 1033, they would have had claims for the denial of benefits.
Thank you, Spoke.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peterson?
Thank you. I'd like to just address a couple of points. First, the opportunities for American Family to pull rank on Cigna and get these documents is outlined in their service agreement on page 4, record retention and review, and it articulates that American Family could have gotten these documents by their contract with Cigna.
But what should be the principle that would lead us to the triggering event for when a breakdown occurs with the claims adjuster, that there needs to be a proactive position taken by the administrator?
I think when the claims administrator uses documents as a part of the rationale for their denial. In this case, their earliest communication on June 13th from Dr. Silberstein indicated that they relied on the benefit resources tool, or the BERT. That should trigger some responsibility then to provide that information. Sharon Mondry, in contrary to Mr. Swofford's allegation that the first request was in October, June 30th, and Judge Shabazz noted that in his decision relying on Anderson, that the first communication to request the summary plan document and the related documents was on June 30th. In response to that, the initial appeal was a letter from Dr. Lutis that came on July 23rd that identified the CERT as part of the reason for the denial. Those should be triggers then that American Family needed to get a hold of these documents to help their fiduciary understand the reasons for the denial, the specific reason for the denial, and for us to prepare an appeal. We had no opportunity to prepare that appeal until we got those documents much, much later.
Can you respond to some of the areas that Mr. Bolton basically says you waived?
Sorry? That we
waived.
Waived?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what he's getting at there. I don't believe that we waived any of our rights in the process. I think that Mr. Bolton has made the argument that the arguments that we're making are legal remedies and not equitable remedies. But this is a case, I think, that squarely sounds in equity based on the fact that the $303 is still withheld, and this is an opportunity to make her whole. And that was one of the errors that the district court made in not allowing us to pursue appropriate remedies against Cigna and American Family. But also, I wanted to make sure that we clarified the record from Mr. Swofford, who said that Sharon Mondry voluntarily quit. It was a voluntary layoff, and it was a consequence of the fact that she no longer had health coverage that provided the speech therapy that her son needed. She needed an alternative to find different coverage, and she ultimately took public benefits through Badger Care. We also want to make sure that
look, I'm a little confused on that. What's your COBRA claim here?
If in the course of her leaving her employment to look for other coverage, if she had received speech therapy benefits, sure she would have taken COBRA benefits at that time because the speech therapy would have been covered.
But she did opt into a state plan, right?
Yes, right.
Which
provided coverage for her, yeah. But it's, you
COBRA
know, it's like...
COBRA would have been a lesser coverage, wouldn't it?
Well, it's like saying you don't have to pay your mortgage anymore. We have free housing at the shelter. I mean, it's not the right way for this to be handled.
I'm assuming your predicate is the housing is better than I mean, the mortgage covers a home that's better than the housing. I'm talking about benefits here.
Right.
And the benefits were not lesser with the state plan, were they?
They were different. There were different requirements, and Wisconsin has a different scheme for providing services to children with autism. That was changing at the time this whole event was unfolding. And it did cause additional challenges for Ms. Mondry.
What would those additional challenges have been?
Well, she ended up having to move from Madison to Milwaukee for a different job. She had to identify other providers. She had to try and pay out of pocket to pay for those providers until the Badger Care coverage was secured for Zev. Finding therapy services for a child with disabilities is extraordinarily difficult, and it's responsibilities of the school district, the insurance company, and sometimes public benefit programs, and we deal with it frequently, and it's not easy, and it's highly stressful and difficult. And the stress that Ms. Mondry endured through this process is also identified as part of the harm to her in the Reddy case. And I want to make sure that we mentioned that as well.
How long would the COBRA would have lasted?
The COBRA would have lasted 18 months. And it possibly could have been extended to up to 36 months since her son had a disability. But that would have been determined by the plan administrator. But in this situation, I think that we really clearly see that American Family was not responsive to her needs in numerous communications.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is...